Will now be called to order for the Senate Higher Education Committee. First on the agenda, we have Senate File 3945. We'll be taking it from the table and re-referring it to the Committee on Finance in order to have it meet the second deadline. Senator Putnam, welcome and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Please move the bill. Thank you.
That's it. Senator Putnam moves that Senate File 3945 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed? Senate File 3945 is recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. 31 seconds, Senator Putnam. That's...
Next, members, we have Senate File 4003, Senator Fateh. This is the omnibus policy bill. We'll have counsel, actually, Ms. White, if you wouldn't mind, walking through the A4 amendment to tell us a little bit about what it is, then we'll hear some testimony and take up amendments as they come. Ms. White, if you wouldn't mind.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll be going through the A4 delete everything amendment to Senate File 4003. There's a summary in your packets, and in the summary, it refers to each bill number in which the language originated. I'll start with Article 1, Higher Education Policy. Section 1 modifies the American Indian Scholars Program to clarify that eligibility includes meeting satisfactory progress, which is consistent with the eligibility requirements for other financial aid and scholarship programs. Section 2 prohibits a school, which includes public and private schools, from withholding a transcript for students with unpaid debt, except under certain circumstances. Section 3 establishes a program for parenting students, requiring public and private institutions to designate at least one employee as a college navigator for parenting students. Section 4 establishes protections for pregnant and parenting students applicable to public colleges and universities. Sections 5 and 6 modify the Minnesota Inclusive Higher Education provisions that were passed last session by moving a reporting requirement to a more appropriate place in the law and adding tribal colleges to the list of eligible grantees. Section 7 is a new section of law that is cited as the Minnesota Respond, Innovate, Succeed, and Empower Act, or RISE Act. This section requires public and private institutions to have policies to assist and support students with disabilities. Section 8 prohibits a public or private institution in Minnesota from providing preferential treatment in admissions to any student applicant on the basis of the student's legacy status. Section 9 allows the Office of Higher Education to consolidate mandated reports on several programs into one annual report beginning February 15, 2026. Section 10 modifies the Summer Academic Enrichment Program to update a reference to universal free meals. Section 11 provides the commissioner with the flexibility in calculating financial aid when a student is eligible for multiple financial aid programs. Sections 12 and 13 modify the Fostering Independence grants to align eligibility with other financial aid programs and to allow the commissioner to start a wait list for the program. It's my understanding there is an amendment to this section. Sections 14 to 18 amend the North Star Promise program. Section 14 amends the definition of gift aid. I understand there's an amendment to this too. Section 15 modifies eligibility primarily to align with other federal financial aid programs, or other financial aid programs, not federal. Section 16 clarifies that the program begins in the fall of 2024 and modifies the supplemental grants for Pell-eligible students, capping the amount at the student's recognized cost of attendance. Section 17 is technical. Section 18 clarifies the duration of the North Star Promise scholarships and specifies when a student is eligible for an additional semester, which is consistent with other aid programs. Sections 19 and 20 amend the Minnesota Student Educational Loan Fund, or the SELF program, by allowing a student to borrow up to the maximum loan amount twice in the same grade level, and prohibiting the commissioner from requiring annual payments, but allowing the commissioner to require monthly payments. Sections 21, 23, 24, and 27 to 32 clarify the physical presence of schools to determine if the school qualifies for state authorization. Sections 22 to 32 modify the Minnesota Private and Out-of-State Public Post-Secondary Education Act. Section 22 defines the term post-secondary education. Section 25, this section was inadvertently dropped and will be reinstated with the technical A5 amendment. It updates a reference to federal law and changes the closed school refund dates to a framework of 180 days to conform with the U.S. Department of Education regs. Section 26 updates a cross-reference to federal law. Sections 27 to 37 amend the laws related to private career schools. Section 33 modifies the Private Career School Act licensure requirement, requiring that a school must not have had a license revoked within the last 2 years. Section 34 prohibits a school from claiming its program qualifies for national certification if that certification is not accepted or recognized in the state. Section 35 allows the commissioner to grant a probationary license to private career school to a private career school to monitor newly licensed schools and allow for the correction of deficiencies. Section 36 prohibits a school whose license has been revoked from reapplying within 2 years and lists new requirements for a school reapplying for licensure. Section 37 adds procedures for schools to demonstrate eligibility without a full program review and makes other clarifying changes. Section 38 expands the workforce development programs of study to include energy. Section 39 adds a new section of law related to academic freedom protection. And Section 40 contain two repealers. Article 2 makes changes to the campus sexual misconduct policy. Section 1 applies to private schools, or changes the application to private schools participating in the federal Pell Grant program. And this policy applies to any event sponsored by the system or by a fraternity or sorority, regardless of whether the activity or event occurred on or off property owned or used by the system or institution. Subdivision 1A modifies several definitions and adds new definitions. Subdivision 2 provides that the victim's rights under this section are not contingent on entering into a non-disclosure agreement. Further, the non-disclosure agreement may not be used as a condition for financial aid or remedial action. Subdivision 2A is a new subdivision related to campus investigations and disciplinary hearing procedures. Subdivision 8 requires training to be culturally responsible and address the unique experiences and challenges of the students to the extent possible. Article 3 is the online program management company requirements. This article imposes requirements on post-secondary institutions that contract with online program management companies to provide online courses and other services. Section 1 defines Section 1, Subdivision 1 defines terms. Section 2 imposes restrictions on contracts between the OPM and institutions and requirements that the OPM provide data for purposes of the expenditure report under Subdivision 4. Subdivision 4 requires an institution to submit annually an expenditure report that contains the information listed in this section and the annual compliance and financial audit report, which is an existing obligation. Subdivision 5 imposes requirements on an OPM if it is retained to provide marketing services. And this section is effective July 1st, 2024, and applies to contracts entered into on or after that date. And Article 4 is our student protections. These modify the Minnesota Private and Out-of-State Public Post-Secondary Education Act. Section 1 requires the school to provide the information listed in this section when a school intends to cease a degree or non-degree program, or the program loses federal financial eligibility. Sections 2 and 5 prohibit schools from using a non-disclosure agreement or contract restricting the student's ability to disclose information about a school's actions or conduct that would be allowed under the student complaint process in existing law. Section 3 provides authority to OHE to revoke, suspend, or refuse approval of a school's non-degree program for reasons listed in this section. Section 4 requires an institution to notify OHE if one or more of the programs loses federal financial aid eligibility for failing to satisfy federal gainful employment requirements.
Thank you very much, Ms. White. Members, we're going to have to pass the A4 amendment before we start messing around with it. So do we have any questions about the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A4 amendment is adopted. Now, members, we are about to appreciate Senate File 4003 as amended. I believe, Senator Fattah, you have the A5 amendment that you'd like to offer?
Yes.
Ms. White, if you would please explain the A5 technical amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the A5 amendment is purely technical. It deletes a duplicative section and inserts a section that was inadvertently dropped from the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Ms. White. Any discussion on the A5 technical amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right, the A5 technical amendment is adopted. Now, Senator Fattah, the bill appears to be in the order or shape of your preference. You want to talk to us a little bit about it?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. First, I want to thank all of the students, staff, faculty, administrators, and advocates who have shown up this session to lend their voices to our discussions. I'm excited to have the omnibus policy bill before the committee today. I want to briefly highlight a few of the exciting pieces of this bill before I turn things over to the commissioner and our other testifiers. We have language first to reduce barriers to transcript access, particularly for incarcerated students or lower income folks who need a transcript to take advantage of employment opportunities. There's also language to establish a Bill of Rights for pregnant and parenting students and designate navigator staff on each campus to assist these students as they juggle raising young children and pursuing a degree. We're also codifying some very important rights and protections for students with disabilities to create more equitable access to higher education for everyone. This bill also ends the practice of legacy admissions in Minnesota, ensuring that admissions decisions are made based on an applicant's merit, leveling the playing field for first-generation students. We're also updating campus sexual violence prevention policies on campuses to ensure that our students can feel safe, can feel more safe. And finally, forward-thinking guardrails on online program management companies that contract with our public institutions. It is important to be good stewards of financial aid. And I also want to speak a bit about a part of this bill that is challenging. As many of you know, the Fostering Independence Grants Program has a budget shortfall between the amount appropriated last year and the projected cost of fiscal year 2025. The bill before us today contains language to create a wait list for the program when costs exceed available funds. As the chair of this committee and the author of this bill, I want all the fosters in the room today or watching online to know that I hear your concerns with the waitlist language. We are continuing to push legislative leaders for a budget target that allows us to fill the shortfall in fiscal year 2025. I also know that the Office of Higher Education and foster advocates have just reached an agreement on an alternative to the waitlist language in the current bill. After moving through testimony on non-controversial amendments, we will take a brief recess to allow council, I believe council has gotten it done now, so we'll skip that. So I want to say first to the advocates, thank you for being honest, vulnerable, and sharing your frustrations with us. You have all done an incredible job of showing all of us how essential this program is to fosters, and I want you to know that finding money to make this program whole is my top priority for the budget this year. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and with that, I'll pass it to the commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Olson, if you would please come down to the desk, state your full name for the record, and commence your testimony when you're ready.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dennis Olson. I'm proud to serve as the Commissioner of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the brief opportunity here to walk through the Higher Education Omnibus Policy Bill in front of you. Both Chair Fate as well as Council already gave a great overview, so I'll just touch on a few key things that I want to highlight as well. First and foremost, so let me just say that every conversation that I've had with members individually or here in this committee during these hearings is just a reminder of the dedication and the passion that this committee has for advancing higher education in Minnesota here. Your partnership certainly is appreciated, and it's clear it's benefiting Minnesotans in every corner of the state. Last session, I don't have to keep saying it, but I will. We made historic investments in higher education in Minnesota. And in looking at this bill, I would say that this session is about strengthening the ways that we support the students that we funded and created programs for last year. This bill includes a number of protections for students as well as critical policy changes that ensure that the Office of Higher Education can hold our institutions to a high standard and collect the best data possible to inform future budget and policy conversations. And so I'll just acknowledge again our appreciation for so many of the provisions within this bill that reflect agency priorities. Really, really briefly, I want to start with North Star Promise. This bill, particularly here in front of you, addresses concerns that we've heard from campus financial aid offices by redefining gift aid. This definition will now exclude financial aid supports earmarked for emergency assistance and food and housing, childcare expenses, childcare grants, and other required supplies. We know that this change is vital in ensuring North Star is implemented as intended and does not impact other aid that students qualify for beyond tuition and fees. I will just acknowledge on behalf of the Office of Higher Education, I don't want to, be redundant with what Senator Fate just shared, but you know, we too have been working closely with advocates and hearing the concerns of students around the Fostering Independence Grant, and you know, happy that we now have an agreed upon amendment in front of us that we view as friendly. And again, you know, want to recognize our staff, in particular our financial aid staff, that are working closely with students and advocates impacted by the shortfall here in this program, and you know, are looking forward to working on continued solutions and unique solutions to address it as well. So I really just appreciate the advocacy as well. Thank you, Senator, for acknowledging that. Moving on quickly, I'll just say too that this bill enacts policies to provide the state with a better understanding of student experiences on campus. This provision, of course, in the bill is vital so that we can make more informed decisions and recommendations to serve students. In particular, this bill requires public colleges and universities to report additional data on students, additional data on programs, finances, outcomes, and in particular, information on parenting students, as well as student debts and balances owed, and student demographics, all critically important to the work we do on behalf of serving students. This bill also expands protections for students by prohibiting schools from withholding transcripts or restricting enrollment for students with balances owed, except under certain circumstances. And schools will now be required to have a policy on how they collect student debt. This bill also requires public college and universities to designate navigators to provide information to parenting students on support services and resources, and establishes additional rights and protections for pregnant and parenting students as well. Now, this bill makes many meaningful changes to how we address sexual misconduct on campus. It'll expand and clarify the definition of sexual misconduct for the purposes of college policies and support services. I'll just say the final part of the bill I'll mention that's really important to the work that our office does is that it'll also require private career schools and colleges to be licensed to operate in the state and meet certain standards. So taken as a whole, this omnibus policy bill, we believe and we hope you believe as well, really puts students first. It ensures they have the protections and supports necessary to focus on their education, while at the same time granting the Office of Higher Education the ability to collect better data and hold institutions to our state's high standards here. So again, in closing, I'll just say I appreciate the support, appreciate the support in particular for the provisions in this bill already, and we'll stand for any questions that you may have. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Members, we will treat our subsequent testifiers kind of as a block, but we're going to take a pause for the commissioner and actually engage with him if you'd like to. So members, if you have questions or comments or concerns that you'd like to raise with the commissioner, now's your chance. What do you got? Senator Duckworth.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Commissioner, good to see you. I just have a quick question for you. I noticed toward the beginning of this bill, there are some changes to the law regarding transcript access. And I apologize if I'm going too far back to a committee hearing where this was touched on in detail, but curious to hear from you. You know, what problems are existing with people being able to get or access to transcripts, and have we found a balance between schools providing them but also still using those transcripts as an effective means of settling payment or things of that nature? And in particular, there's something in here that says, a transcript has to be sent if someone's prospective employer requests one. Is a school still allowed to charge a minor fee for sending out official certified transcripts, or is that impacted by this bill as well? Thank you.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Duckworth, thank you for the question. To the best of my knowledge, doesn't impact any of the fees directly related to issuing a transcript. Those are typically really nominal fees. And are sometimes, an instance of a student requiring a transcript for a particular purpose are waived often. This basically removes the ability to hold that over a student's head, but still puts provisions in there to appropriately collect debt if debt is owed. It doesn't waive anything, but it allows the student to, continue to move on either with another program or to seek employment and have that transcript in hand to be able to do so, but doesn't absolve any of the debt related.
Senator Duckworth, any follow-up? Members, any other questions or comments? Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this is the right time to discuss the sections on disability accommodations, or Senator Fateh, if you want to wait until the folks with accessibility resources come, would you prefer, or should I ask the questions now?
We'll wait till then.
Senator Farnsworth, if that's acceptable with you, I think we could put pause on that. We'll go through the testifiers, and then we can engage in that, if that's all right with you.
Yes, that's fine. Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Immediately germane to the commissioner. Seeing none, thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Now, members, we have four or five further testifiers. I would advise our testifying friends, you were told 2 minutes. But note that I'm not as mean as Sam is. But if we could still keep it under three, that'd be cool. Ms. Burgess, if you could please, would you come to the table, state your full name for the record? Ms. Burgess, if you're online, if you would please unmute your microphone, turn on your camera, state your full name for the record, and commence your testimony when you're ready.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kristen Burgess. I am with the Minnesota State Colleges and University System, specifically Metro State University. I serve as the director for the Center for Accessibility Resources, charged with student accommodations. I am also a senior community faculty member and the interim ADA coordinator for the university. Senators, Minnesota's higher education system is evolving and becoming more inclusive. This benefits our state and its economy. However, students with disabilities still face hurdles in accessing these opportunities. Research from the Department of Ed shows only 37% of students with disabilities disclose their disability to their higher ed institution. There may be reasons for this underreporting, but a common complaint from students who do disclose is that the demand for excessive documentation to prove their disability creates barriers for them. This paperwork can be expensive and is unnecessary when it has been existing in a previous time in their life. This particular amendment included in the omnibus bill offers a clear solution and establishes clear guidelines for acceptable documentation when it's necessary that will help streamline the process for students seeking accommodations. This also simplifies things for institutions as well as the student and empowers students with disabilities to focus on their studies. We have continued to see an increasing need for accommodations. At Metro State in particular, we've seen the number grow from around 190 students in our peak semester in 2011 to almost 400 students currently, and that number continues to increase. What students have found in the variability in documentation requirements is not only frustrating for them, it can be costly and in some cases is an insurmountable barrier to access. This lack of access has consequences. 2021 census data show that 20% of students with disabilities ages 25 to 34 have attained a bachelor's degree or higher, compared to 41% of their non-disabled peers. Providing equitable access helps students achieve their goals and break free of low-income cycles, propelling them towards middle-income status or higher. This, in turn, strengthens our state's economy and closes the educational achievement gap. Senators, this is a crucial step towards ensuring equitable access to education for all of Minnesota's students. Passing this will help create not only a more welcoming and consistent environment for students with disabilities, but it provides clear information on accommodations, the process, and along with that, removes stigma and helps normalize disability. It empowers students to access their education and ultimately achieve their goals of earning a degree. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Burgess. Ms. Fraser, if you would please, would you please come to the desk? State your full name for the record. Commence your testimony when you're ready, please.
Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak before you today. My name is Iguan Fraser. I'm the Policy and Advocacy Manager with Foster Advocates. I'm a mother, a foster, currently reside in northern Minnesota, and a previous recipient of the Fostering Independence Grant. Last week, I was able to speak to the reality of what FIC has done for fosters in our state. This program has been life-changing. It has opened the door to higher education that for many did not exist before. There was no door, no hope of ever having a door. FIC has not only created a door for fosters, it has created homes. It has created homes where stomachs are full, minds are at ease, and hope has enlivened. Fosters were only beginning to dream in our state. Something we so very rarely get to do amidst the reality of harsh circumstances, that dreaming has been replaced with a deep dread. We should never be in a scenario where this waitlist needs to be utilized, and at the same time, we understand the need, and that is why we are supportive of the amended language proposed today. We appreciate the deep collaboration with OHE staff and Senate staff to take the time needed to ensure we create a mechanism to do what is right by fosters, so that whatever the shortfall is, hoping there is none, we can avoid adding additional harm to our community. As a state and as those who sit in positions of power, you have a communal responsibility and a duty of care to the young people receiving FIG to follow through on the commitment that you all made 2 years ago, a beautiful commitment and a promise to care for them as they obtain their goals and dreams, something I assume you would do for your children at home. A promise to let fosters know we deserve the same educational outcomes as our peers. We deserve more than what our circumstances have allowed. I want to begin to close this out by naming, we know you here are busy at the legislature. We know this may seem like a small educational issue that simply needs a patch and you can move on to bigger, better, and flashier issues. But I hope you understand, and after hearing from myself and other testifiers today, that this is not a small issue for a population of young people the state has committed to caring for. These young people will become homeless, they will become hungry, they will be sent into a survival mode that the state has trained us so well to live in while in foster care. They will lose hope. Losing hope is a dark place to be in this already heavy world. I urge and ask you to correct the shortfall, find and provide the necessary funding to support the original legislation, to fulfill your promise and duty to fosters, our children. Thank you. And additionally, I just want to thank Senator Fitte and the committee members here today for that you showed up in support for our community. It's deeply appreciated. And yeah, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Fraser. Ms. Asif?
Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Marwa Asif, and I'm the state chair for Students United. Students United is a statewide student association representing all current, future, and former Minnesota State University students, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on the committee's policy omnibus bill. First of all, we are grateful that Chair Fateh has included the RISE Act in Senate File 4003. Students United supports efforts to make college more accessible for students, and we thank all the advocates who have fought tirelessly for this bill. Students United supports the inclusion of language that will ban withholding a student's degree to collect outstanding debt. This speaks to the very essence of fairness and compassion, ensuring that students facing financial challenges are not further burdened on their path to graduation. It's about recognizing the humanity behind each student's journey and ensuring that obstacles like financial hardship do not stand in the way of their dreams and aspirations. We also appreciate Senate File 4003's inclusion of support for pregnant and parenting students. As Students United, we also believe that survivors of sexual assault and misconduct must be central in the decision-making skills and advocacy process. This is why we had testified in support of Senator Lindsey Port's Senate File 1045, and we're thankful that this language is included in the omnibus bill. Students deserve to feel safe, cared for, and respected on our campuses. And we appreciate the efforts to protect survivors and prevent future incidents of assault and misconduct. This language is needed, and it's needed now. We also want to thank this committee for including language protecting students from predatory practices from online program managers, or OPMs. From Students United's perspective, we are concerned with evidence that OPMs can often take advantage of marginalized communities. We're also worried about the revenue sharing model, which can incentivize OPMs to urge universities to raise tuition. And for these reasons, we support the language included in this bill and encourage members to also support it. And on behalf of Students United, I thank Chair Fateh, members of this community, and the committee staff for your eagerness to seek out the student perspective. We know how it feels that sometimes student voices can often be overlooked, but we have felt listened to and valued by this committee, its members, and its staff. So thank you for your hard work during this session, and we look forward to our continued partnership as the omnibus bill moves forward.
Thank you very much, Ms. Asif. It's good to see you again. Dr. Chinyega, if you would please. If you would please state your full name for the record and commence your testimony when you're ready.
Thank you. My name is Jenna Chernega. I'm the president of the Interfaculty Organization, and I'm a faculty member at Winona State University. Chair Putnam, Chair Fateh, members of the committee, Sam, thank you for including the academic freedom language in the omnibus bill. It will send a message across the country that Minnesota will not succumb to the anti-academic trends moving in other parts of our nation. Thank you, too, for including the online program management language. I'd like to mention that the low upfront costs of using online program management companies are borne by our faculty, who are only compensated for 40 hours of work when it took an average of 300 hours of work to transform courses from their in-person versions into online accelerated versions. We look forward to working with the committee as the bill moves through the process. And again, thank you so much for listening and including these pieces.
Dr. Grant?
I got a promotion. I'm now a doctor. Excellent. Chair Fattah, Vice Chair Putnam, Ranking Member Duckworth, committee members, my name is Mark Grant. I'm a 27-year communication faculty member at Dakota County Technical College and currently help direct the governmental relations work on behalf of Minnesota State College faculty. We represent nearly 4,000 instructors, counselors, librarians on 26 colleges, 47 campuses across the state of Minnesota, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak today. For the record, I was told no 2 minute or no such thing as 2 minutes, but I'm sticking to it. I'm here to voice our support for Senate File 4003 and thank the committee for their hard work this session. I'm going to limit my comments to two specific areas of the bill. First, Article 1, Section 39, dealing with academic freedom. Our faculty testified in support of this bill 2 weeks ago, and its inclusion in the policy bill sends a strong message about Minnesota's commitment to teaching, learning, and the integrity of our higher education lecture halls, classrooms, and labs. The second area I'd like to comment on is, I believe, inherently linked to the previous topic in that it deals with the fundamental integrity of what happens in our teaching spaces, and that is Article 3 dealing with online program management companies. Publicly, MSCF has stayed largely silent on this issue, preferring instead to work closely with the IFO behind the scenes to address our concerns. Given OPM's presence in Minnesota State is currently limited to 2 universities, we have been more than willing to let the IFO take the lead on this. But to be clear, Minnesota State College faculty's concerns are completely in line with those already stated by IFO President Jenna Turnaga. When it comes to academic integrity, when the IFO sneezes, MSCF gets a cold. There's no surprise on our part why these companies have come about and why they favor the funding models that they do. In the face of declining investment in higher education in Minnesota over the past 2 decades, campus presidents have been told over and over and over again to get creative. And for the record, I'm pro-creativity, but creativity mixed with desperation often results in short-sighted decisions that years down the road leave folks wishing they could have a do-over. That is why this legislation is so important. It addresses a number of concerns before we find ourselves wishing we would have done something. My field is communication and my degree is in rhetoric, and through that lens, I'm taken and honestly quite impressed by some of the language in the written testimony submitted by academic partnerships. Their multiple references to fee for persistence suggest that staying enrolled is how you measure success. By that metric, my 21-year-old daughter, who is currently on her 4th major, would be among the most successful college students in American history. Anyone who has ever actually taught students knows the complex nature of true success. Having said that, I will from now on be referring to all the money that I leave at local casinos as simply a fee for persistence. In short, we are struck by how familiar this all sounds to the private, proprietary model that has proven time and time again to exploit students and compromise academic integrity for the sake of profit. MSCF does not think this model has any place in our classrooms, face or virtual, and we sincerely thank you for your attention to this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Grant, and I apologize for giving you a degree you don't want, and the Senate record will be corrected.
I'm an ordained reverend, so you can just refer to me as Reverend Grant. That's fine.
Members, that concludes our scheduled testifiers. If we have questions or comments for any of those testifiers, I'm sure they'll be glad to come back up and answer them for us. Or we could begin discussion of the bill as a whole, or if there are efforts to mess with it, that may begin now as well. It's up to you. Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No efforts to mess with anything quite yet. Just a couple questions, if that's okay, or comments. On page 4, under the section that has to do with protections for pregnant and parenting students, I'll read just a couple of lines from 4.15 to 4.18. It talks about rights and protections, and I'm going to preface all of this by saying I'm very supportive of this portion of the bill. I just have something for folks to consider in the future. So it says a Minnesota state college or university may not, that I'm going to jump down, require a pregnant or parenting student solely because of the student's status as a pregnant or parenting student or due to issues related to the student's pregnancy or parenting too. Then I go down to line 4.23. It says refrain from joining or cease participating in any course, activity, or program at the college or university. And I think that some additional consideration might need to be given to this language. I think there might be some appropriate exemptions or some appropriate situations for physical reasons that maybe a school would say to a student, it might not be the best idea for you to participate in this activity or this training or this portion of a course if you happen to be pregnant or something like that. So I just want to provide that sort of flexibility for everybody involved So just offer that for consideration, not asking you to do anything, not offering an amendment. The only other question I have, Mr. Chair, relates to page 43, Article 3, the online program management company requirements. I think last week we kind of had a discussion as it relates to this bill and programs in our schools, et cetera, and I think I remember folks kind of maybe entertaining that there was some benefit to continuing to have a conversation and trying to find or strike a balance as it relates to what the bill originally proposed and the impact it would have. So I'm just curious, is what's included in the omnibus bill the same exact language that we went over earlier in this committee, or has there been any tweaks or further conversations and modifications to try to strike a little bit of a balance or compromise? Thank you.
And Senator Duckworth, to your first question about student support service, we do have someone here who can talk to us a little bit about that if you like. Maybe we should do that first and then go to your second question if that's okay. Ms. Cullimore, are you available? Would you mind stepping up and maybe stating your full name for the record and engaging with Senator Duckworth's concerns or questions? Excuse me, questions and concerns.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Miriam Cullimore. I work at the Office of Higher Education as the Student, Parent, and Whole Family Coordinator. We had a little bit of discussion going on during that question, so if you don't mind, could you please say it once more?
Yeah, I'll try to be brief. There's a portion of the bill that basically says colleges, universities can't prohibit or refrain somebody who's pregnant from participating in certain courses or activities, or I can't remember the other word. And my concern is there may be some valid activities or programs that if someone is pregnant or far along that pregnancy, the school might want to caution them or say, hey, you know what, it might not be the best idea for you to participate in this. And I don't want a school to be on the hook for trying to have that well-intended, good-faith conversation for a student and be found to be in violation of the law. Mm-hmm. So that's really all I'm asking for is, are there some exceptions or situations in which you want to provide a little bit of freedom in statute for a school to do something like that?
Well, further on in the bill, it does suggest that the student can select out of those types of activities. What this is trying to get at is really making sure that they don't feel pressured to do so. So if there's an opportunity to work on the wording around that so that making a suggestion is not then becoming a legal concern, I'd welcome that discussion. However, I do want to make sure that we are keeping the student's perspective in mind as we're looking at that, only because pregnant and parenting students often do feel pressured to step out or take time off or not participate fully in the college experience because of their status as a pregnant or parenting student and the responsibilities that come with that. So I do welcome the opportunity to have that discussion in terms of finding some flexible language. We just want to make sure not to add undue pressure to the circumstances.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I very much appreciate that. I think we both want to accomplish the same thing, so I appreciate your openness to it. I'm the son of a mom who became pregnant with me when she was 17. So there are all sorts of things that she was pressured to do or maybe looks that she got. So I can appreciate and understand that, and I want to make sure that we prevent that as much as possible, but that we also are, you know, allowing folks to be as safe as possible as well. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. And to your second question about the OPM situation, I will assure you this, that this is still an ongoing process, and there are folks in this room who are still involved in that conversation around the table. But more concretely, as to the work that's already been done, I'm going to ask Ms. White to actually, if she would, articulate the distinctions between the current bill and the language that we saw last week.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and members, the major difference between the DE amendment that was adopted to Senate File 4340 and the language before you is Subdivision 4. There's more extensive reporting requirements, and these reporting requirements, it's kind of a melding between the bill as introduced and the DE amendment. So there's more extensive reporting requirements, and they're also tied to the compliance and financial audit. So the compliance and financial audit, that is an existing responsibility. They have an independent public accountant who does that. So they're asking the accountant to also provide information to ensure that the online program management company is complying with the contract stipulations. And also there's language added under the contract stipulation provision that requires the online program management company to provide that information that's required to submit the report under subdivision 4.
Thank you, Ms. White. Senator Duckworth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for that information. I appreciate it. Well, then, if you'll indulge me, Mr. Chair, just a couple of comments. I'm encouraged to hear that those conversations are maybe still taking place. I've been around long enough to know, though, that I should still be cautious of the fact that it's in the omnibus bill already. It may or may not actually change before it passes and becomes law. So I would just encourage folks to continue having those conversations. I think the language or the intent of the bill is likely warranted based on what I've heard, that maybe some changes or tweaks need to be made, but also it's my understanding that there's at least one program in particular in St. Cloud that is using this at a high level and it's benefiting a lot of students. And so I would just encourage everybody to make sure that we continue to work on it, try to strike and find a balance so that we're not losing what could be a good program or opportunity for colleges, universities, and students to participate in because we pass a law that perhaps requires it to be dissolved altogether. So, not looking to wade into a big debate on this. It's just an encouragement to keep working on it, and let's be mindful about what we do before it actually becomes law, if it ultimately does. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. And just again, sort of to publicly reiterate our commitment to continuing to talk about this, and I know that Senator Fattah, if you'd like to promise that as well publicly, you're welcome to.
Yes, I'm ready to commit to working with you, Senator Duckworth. I also want to note that this language doesn't apply to existing contracts as well, so I want to make that clear. Thank you.
Members, other questions, comments, points of discussion? Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to preface this similar to Senator Duckworth's preface that this is a section of the bill that I support. And so I don't want this to be perceived as an attack, at least not on this portion of the bill. So on the disability part, so for those who know, I've been a special ed teacher for most of my career, and so I've spent my career working with people with disabilities, and I just have a couple of questions. Subdivision 3 on page 7 says that each institution of higher education shall adopt a policy making self-disclosure by students with a disability sufficient proof of the disability. And I just want to make sure I'm clear that that begins the process then of assessing to determine whether somebody would in fact need accommodations. Is that correct?
Senator Fattah? Chair Fattah?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Ms. Huff from OHE is available to answer that question.
Sure. Ms. Huff, I believe you're online. If you could please, if you're willing to opine on this issue, could you please unmute your microphone, turn on your camera, state your full name, and offer your insights? And she might not be there.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Chair Putnam and Senator Farnsworth. Simply put, it's yes. The disclosure, self-disclosure, will start the interactive process for consideration for reasonable accommodations.
Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's what I thought, because then I look at the next section that talks about the documentation. And one of the documents that can be allowed is an individual education program, and which is kind of my wheelhouse. It's what I know about. So I have a little bit of concern about that, not a huge concern. But my job for the last 13 years with the Hibbing Schools has been special education evaluator. So I test kids, determine whether they qualify for services, determine whether there's a need for services. And so on page 9, subdivision 5, section 2, it says, not require a student to be reevaluated for or submit documentation to prove the presence of a permanent disability. And so the concern that I have on this is, say we test a kid for special education when they're in 7th or 8th grade. And I'll just use the example of a specific learning disability, and they qualify for having a specific learning disability. Oftentimes, or maybe I'll start, we test them in third grade, they qualify for having a specific learning disability. We have to test them every year to determine whether they continue to have a disability and whether there continues to be a need. So let's say we place a child in special education in third grade, test them again in sixth grade, they continue to have a need. The evaluation is good for 3 years, so you know, get to up to their 10th grade, and we test them again in 10th grade, and there's no longer a need. They no longer qualify. So it's not a permanent disability. There's no longer a need for services. So take the same child. Their evaluation would expire after they graduate from high school. Maybe if we had tested them the summer after high school, they wouldn't qualify. There's no longer a need. They, you know, we would say they don't have a specific learning disability. Under this bill, they get to college. They're like, here's my IEP. I want accommodations. And we're not doing any updated testing because kids' brains are growing and improving. And so the word permanent disability sort of concerns me. I mean, I want to make sure that all of the kids that need help get help. But oftentimes, you know, once or twice a year, at least in the Hibbing School District, I test a kid that no longer has a need for services, no longer qualifies. And under this, that doesn't really allow us to assess somebody. And I know it's a small thing, and I'm wasting a lot of people's time. And if I had been here last week, I apologize. I had an appointment up north. I could have brought this up last week. But I think my point is I want to make sure that the people who actually have the need for services are getting the need for services. And so I struggle with the part about not reevaluating students after a certain amount of time because there may not be a need for services. And rather than using resources on a student who doesn't have a need, we can use those resources on a student who does have a need. So I don't have an amendment or anything. I just, that's in that section my only small area of concern.
Thank you, Senator Farnsworth, and your sincerity is appreciated and acknowledged. I do believe that Ms. Burgess or Ms. Hoff, you both spoke to this issue when we did initially hear the bill. If either of you would like to offer your perspective, feel free to, again, unmute, turn your camera on, state your full name for the record, and tell us what you think.
Sure, Chair Putnam. And Senator Farnsworth, the important thing is for, I mean, I'll just use specific examples. By self-disclosing, if somebody has a disability, let's just say dyslexia, auditory processing disorder, ADHD, the disability doesn't go away, but the maybe that need for accommodations changes over time in terms of the as the student ages. And in college, because it's covered by the ADA and 504, it's really a combination of factors that they have a disability, how that disability impacts them, and what that looks like in terms of the particular classes or courses that they're taking in college. And that is sort of that interactive process in determining what reasonable accommodations that they need. And I'll also just leave it open for Kristen to add into that if there's anything else.
Ms. Burgess, if you would please turn on your microphone and state your full name for the record again, if you wouldn't mind. And then let's hear what you got to say.
Thank you, Chair. Again, my name is Kristen Burgess. To what Ms. Hoff just related, it is determined on a case-by-case basis, and the existence of a disability is what this language is driving at. And what we want to know is, does that person have a disability? Did they have a disability? Because part of the qualification under Americans with Disabilities Act is a history of, or a documented disability, and that IEP speaks to that enough to say, let's have a further conversation and determine what barriers you're currently experiencing, which are going to probably look very different from what they looked like in that P-12 arena.
Thank you, Ms. Burgess. Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I think we're all, you know, kind of on the same side on this. We want to make sure that we do what's right and use resources to help the kids that need it. But I think you you sort of touched on what I was getting at, that the needs change, and if we're not doing any sort of reevaluation, we won't have a full picture on what the needs are. So I would just caution against not doing a deeper reevaluation, just to make sure that we know what those needs are, and so that we're using the appropriate accommodations. So that's all I have to say. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Farnsworth. Now, members, I would I appreciate the conversation, the discussion that we're having, but I also smell a couple of amendments on the way. Perhaps we could continue our discussion in the context of those amendments if they'd like to be offered. Again, I'm not intending to foreclose discussion in any way. If you do got other stuff you want to talk about, that'd be great, but perhaps we could do that as well. Senator Umar Verbeek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just before we go into amendments, just want to say how excited I am to see my bill to ban legacy admissions into our policy omnibus.
Thank you, Senator Umar Verbeek. Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple, one quick comment in one section, then I'll offer my amendment, and I'll save my other comments for when the other amendment is up. I share some of Senator Duckworth's concerns around Article 3. You know, I've carried a fair number of big bills, and part of doing that is engaging all of the stakeholders and listening to concerns, and I've had some conversations with folks, and I'm not sure that that there have been a beginning of conversations, but I'm not sure all issues have been addressed. And again, I think, you know, we want to be careful with what we do. We see a lot of advertisements for online courses from schools from around the country. And we're trying to help our schools be competitive in that market. And we want to be careful that this legislation isn't going to have exactly the opposite impact. So I hope we are willing to engage and listen to some of those concerns to make sure that we're not putting our schools in a position where they might completely lose their online presence because they just can't compete with the other schools that are doing it out there from other states. With that, I want to then talk about the piece around the North Star Promise and some of that tweak language, and I really appreciate the chair being so willing to have conversations and OHE to have conversations with myself and with the MnState system. I have the A6 amendment that I would like to offer.
Senator Rarick moves the A6 amendment to the amendment. So, Senator Rarick, to your amendment, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This isn't completely the fix that I would have hoped for, but it's a part, gets us partway there. You've heard me talking about my concern around the North Star Promise since we started talking about it and how it is going to impact the private scholarships, the private foundations that are out there, particularly in regards to what I've seen firsthand at Pine Tech with the Franzen Foundation Scholarship. And I know Senator Kupek, I've seen him at two of the breakfasts for the MnState system. And I've been at three of them myself and talked about this very provision. And just this morning, one of the foundation presidents said, you know what, we haven't given out a single scholarship this year, and it's because of this. We're in direct, many of our sponsors believe we're now in direct competition with the state, and we're actually subsidizing the state by doing this. And we're asking ourselves, and many of our sponsors and donors are asking, why would I do this if the state's just going to cover it anyway? So what this amendment would do is it allows the foundations that are at our MnState system to be able to use their scholarships towards books, living expenses, things like that. That's we're defining that, redefining that gift piece so that those dollars can go towards helping our students make school more affordable. So North Star would go first, and for those foundations, they would be able to help the student in other ways. And so would appreciate the committee's support.
Senator Fateh, would you mind sharing your feelings on the A6 amendment?
Yeah, I want to first say thank you, Mr. Chair, and then I want to say thank you to Senator Rarick for bringing that to our attention and working on this, and I do view it as a friendly amendment, so thank you.
So Chair Fattah has characterized this as a friendly amendment. So members, is there any discussion or comments? Senator Kupak.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Rarick. We had these discussions before, and I've heard also from, you know, schools in my district that this is something they really, really want to see. So really, thank you for adding this in. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator Kupak. Members, any other questions, comments, concerns? All in favor of the A6 amendment to the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Oppose? The A6 amendment to the amendment is adopted. Senator Fattah, would you like to move or discuss your A8 amendment at this point? After you make the motion, if you wouldn't mind, Chair Fattah, we'll ask Ms. White to talk it through.
Yes, I'll move. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
So Senator Fattah moves the A8 amendment to the amendment. Ms. White, if you wouldn't mind discussing it for us, please.
Mr. Chair and members, this modifies the FIG language in the bill, and it requires the commissioner to establish a priority application deadline. And if there is a projected shortfall in the available resources, the commissioner is required to proportionately reduce awards to keep the spending within the available resources. And also applicants applying after the priority deadline that the commissioner establishes, for whom the office has received a completed application, must be placed on a waiting list. And then the other language on the A8 amendment on lines 1.9 to 1.13 are basically what is in the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Ms. White. Thank you, Ms. White. It might be prudent at this point perhaps to have someone from OHE or from Foster Advocates come up and offer their opinion if you're interested. Or not if you aren't. Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, want to thank Senator Fattah for engaging on this one and for the advocates for the Fosters digging in so hard and having these conversations. I support the amendment, but let's be honest, this is not the fix. This helps them, but I want to implore all of the members of this committee have a conversation with Senator Marty and have a conversation with the majority leader. this is about a $3.5 million shortfall estimation. I think the real fix would be to find that one-time funding to get us through this year and to continue to have the conversation next year on how we address this, if it's having to reprioritize some things or make some shifts. But I think that would be the real solution. So I absolutely support adopting this language, but again, ask everybody, let's look for that one-time funding for this year to follow through on the complete promise that we made to the Fosters, and then we can make a commitment to continuing next year to try to address it so that we are not, as they said, pulling the rug out from under them. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Rarick. My understanding is that Ms. Guerra would like to say a couple words. If you would please, Ms. Guerra, could you come to the table, state your full name for the record, and commence your testimony when you're ready.
Thank you, Chair, members. Sorry, it's been a long day. I don't think I can speak to it better. I just want to thank Senator Rarick. I think you said it well. I think really appreciate all of the staff, all of the members, and folks at OHE who see the need that we cannot break this promise to Fosters in our state. And I know that was not anyone's intention. And so I just want to thank you all again. But we're not done. Like Senator Rarick said, let's keep pushing. Let's find that 5 to 6 million and make right by our promise. Thank you all.
Thank you, Ms. Guerra. Members, any other questions, comments, or points of discussion to the A8 amendment to the amendment? Senator Umuver-Bayton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also glad to see that there's a small interim solution right now. I've already spoken with Senator Marty. I think our majority leader can hear us all loud and clear right now. And just want to reiterate what Travis Matthews said when testifying earlier about it being a homelessness issue, incarceration issue, racial justice issue, queer justice issue. It's a top priority for me. And so glad to see we have something in the meantime, and we'll all keep pushing and advocating for this.
Thank you, Senator Weaver Brayton. Members, any other questions, comments, concerns about the A8 amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. The A8 amendment to the amendment is adopted. Members, other amendments that you would like to offer for consideration? Senator Duckworth, please.
Mr. Chair, I have what you maybe were smelling earlier. Just kidding. I'd like to offer the A7 amendment.
Senator Duckworth offers the A7 amendment to the amendment.
I think everybody's got it in their packets. Do you need a copy, Senator Fateh?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Got it right now.
No? Do you need a copy?
No, I have.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Leader.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Senator Duckworth.
No worries. Thank you. Senator Fateh, this amendment will probably look familiar to you. It's a bill of yours. Matter of fact, I like it so much, I think I co-authored it with you. You'll notice it is missing an appropriation, though. I tried to do you a favor and update it a little bit. But the long and short of it is this, and I know that this might be something that doesn't necessarily have the bipartisan support that the other couple of amendments did. Nevertheless, I want to talk about it and just keep it on your radar because I think it is important. This amendment has to do with something called the Promise Equalization Scholarship. And really the gist of it is this. We know that there are students of ours here in Minnesota that attend our fine and outstanding public colleges and universities. We've also got students that attend our outstanding private colleges and universities. And North Star Promise passed last year, helps a lot of students and families as it relates to those public colleges and universities. What this amendment does is to say, hey, if we've got students who are eligible, who meet the same criteria, and everybody who has also been eligible for the North Star Promise and received funding, if there's anything left over, that it can be considered for schools, or excuse me, for students who are attending schools that aren't public. So our other colleges and universities that do great work throughout the state. And I offer it, hopefully, for consideration to this bill. And again, I would just remind everybody, it says if there are any funds left over after we've met the need or the request of students attending public schools, that we would be considered, that the other students would be considered at private schools. And one other thing I'd say, Mr. Chair, is this. A state grant program does exist. So the state of Minnesota does help students who attend both private and public colleges or universities. So this isn't a threshold that hasn't been crossed before. We already do this, and so I submit it for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Duckworth. Senator Fateh, would you like to begin the conversation with your opinion or your attitude toward the A7 amendment to the amendment, please?
Yeah, thank you, Senator Putnam, and thank you, Senator Duckworth. I did agree to co-author the bill to continue the conversation with the private colleges. And it's something that I know is very close, that you're watching very closely and working on. I would have to say no for now, but I'm willing to continue the conversation with you going into this.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Senator Duckworth.
I can appreciate that, and I'm going to take you at your word that we'll hopefully keep working on it and see if there's opportunity. And at the end of the day, I hope folks can realize this isn't a public versus private college or university question. It's a question of, in my opinion, maximum opportunity for the maximum amount of students here in Minnesota. So I look forward to continue to engage with you on the topic, and hopefully if there is ever opportunity for us to include even more students, I hope we certainly seize that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Duckworth, would you still like us to consider the amendment?
Well, you know, I'm an optimist, so I'm going to keep working on you, Senator Fontaine. I don't want to hurt my chances. So that being said, I will withdraw the amendment and hope that we can do something in the future as it relates to this. But if we don't, we might see it again at some point. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Senator Umar Baton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Duckworth. I appreciate the discussion. I just, you know, when I see this, I have to talk about our duty to fund public education. We heard from our systems this year, we heard from our FIGS students as well, which I'm really glad that's a priority of all of ours. And we're working with leadership. We're talking to our finance chair about it. But our public institutions have been defunded for decades, and they're just catching up. And we heard that from them pretty loud and clear at the beginning of session. I just can't support taking money away from our public institutions. I mean, they've got supplemental budget requests, and it allows this program to go much further towards, you know, the tuition rates at Minn State and University of Minnesota. We'll be able to help so many more students, but I just really want to see us prioritize funding these institutions that are in desperate need of those funds first and foremost.
Thank you, Senator Mover-Baton, for making that that sort of practical argument. There is another discussion I would love us to have at some point on this philosophical question about the state's relationship to public schools versus private schools, because there's a deeper theoretical philosophical issue in addition to the practical ones. Senator Duckworth?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Maybe I withdrew my amendment too soon. Just kidding.
So you're now optimistic it was going to pass?
Yeah, no. So I hear you, and I can very much appreciate where you're coming from. And as somebody who served on a public school board for a little while, I get and understand the difference between the state's obligations to public schools versus private. I think also the state, over the course of its history, has recognized the value, especially in higher education, of private institutions and what they bring to bear for our students and for the workforce and the additional opportunities that those institutions might provide to students that don't exist in some of the public ones. I would say this as well. There are several mandates in this bill that apply to both public and private schools. And so if we're going to have a conversation about fairness and we are going to say that some students who attend public universities and colleges have funds available to them and their families if they meet eligibility, but they're not available to other students because they attend a private university, well, then I think philosophically we have to ask ourselves a question. Do we as a state apply all the rules the same to everybody? And I think that's a fair question to ask. I'm not advocating for one side or the other. But at the end of the day, and why I respect my colleague, Senator Mover-Baton, is I know this is true of all of us up here. We want to help as many students and families as possible. My personal opinion is a student is a student is a student, regardless of where they go to school. And if we can help them and they have a need, I think we owe it to them to continue to have those conversations. So I appreciate the committee giving me the time to make those remarks today, and I hope we can continue to cast a wider net and help even more students and families achieve their dream of higher education. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Duckworth, for that. I think you make an excellent point, one that we should talk about a little bit more. Members, do we see have any other amendments or issues of discussion or questions or comments you'd like to make? Seeing none, we now move to final passage on Senate File 4003 as amended. Senator Tay moves that Senate File 4003 as amended be recommended to be passed and to place on general, that was a horrible sentence there, as amended be recommended to pass and be placed on general orders.
Yes.
Any discussion to that amendment, to that that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Senate File 4003, as amended, will now pass and be placed on general orders. Thank you, Senator Fattah.
Thank you.
Does he want to do it? All business being done, we are now.
Good to go.
Adjourned.
Sorry.